All right. So as we start our lesson on making assumptions, I asked you to define what an assumption is. What definitions did y'all come up with?
Assumption is true without question or proof.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Okay. I got that definition. I also got something taken for granted. Okay. Specifically in this lesson, I wanted to address assumptions made between us, between people, and how it affects our earthly relationships and how we interact with each other. So let's look at our first example. Let's look at Samuel and David. We'll be in 1 Samuel 16. So Samuel is fixing to find the second king, and he's going to Jesse's house and going through his sons. And I'm going to start reading in verse 6. When they entered, he looked at Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before him." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees. For man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Then he calls through all of the rest of the sons. And all of verse 10, Jesse made 7 of his sons to pass before Samuel. And but Samuel said to Jesse, "The Lord has not chosen these." verse 11, and Samuel said to Jesse, "Are these all the children?" And he said, "There remains yet the youngest, and behold, he is tending the sheep." Then Samuel said to Jesse, "Send and bring him, for we will not sit down until he comes here." So he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy with beautiful eyes and handsome in appearance, and the Lord said, "Arise and anoint him, for this is he." Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon David from that day forward, and Samuel arose and went to Ramah. Okay, so in the beginning, what assumption does Samuel make when he's looking at the oldest brother?
It was common for the oldest brother to...
Okay. Anything else?
Well, God told him not to focus on outward appearance. Like, it implies or infers that he was, like, handsome or tall or good-looking or something.
Okay, and does Samuel have any reason to believe someone like that would be king? What do we know about Saul, the first king? He was a head and shoulders above everyone else. It said that he was handsome, right? Okay, so it wouldn't have been, it would have been a good assumption to assume that he was the firstborn. He's a good, you know, he's a good specimen for being king. How well did that work out for Saul? Not so well. Okay. That's why we're looking at a new king, right? And so what is God's response in verse 7?
Don't look at his face. Yeah. Look at the outward appearance, but his heart.
Very good. Okay. So God knows people's hearts, but we don't. So how do we make righteous judgments about people, not based on their looks alone?
We know something about them if we've been around them. We know their actions. We're not like God. We can't see a man's heart, but by their actions you shall know them. By their fruits you shall know them.
Right. So that's Matthew 7. By your fruits you shall know them. In this particular case, he did not know all of the brothers, but in a lot of times with our dealings, we do know people and we know their deeds and we can look at them and know from what they look like, what kind of person, I mean, excuse me, know from their deeds what kind of a person they are. Does anybody need a lesson? Do you have a lesson, Ms. Rita?
Yeah,
so what are some daily real life situations that reflect how this kind of an assumption based on physical appearance can affect how you treat or interact with someone? Yes, ma'am.
I have a little bit of a story.
Go for it.
Before I worked in a group home for mentally and physically disabled, and we had a woman with Down syndrome. She was just a tiny little one. And we were walking around, and, you know, when you're with a group of people with different abilities and disabilities, it's common for people to stare. And as frustrating as that gets, you know, you become used to it, and you smile, and you go on about it. She was walking and she took off lunch with this big biker man with a big white beard, cut off shirt, tattooed, and I'm like, oh no, come back, you're good tonight, come back. And she went over, she gave him a hug, and he hugged her back, hi, honey, he's that, and he talked with her. And it was like the sweetest interaction because in both instances, you wouldn't expect that. By appearances. You wouldn't expect him to be as friendly and as warm and welcoming that he was with her. And anytime I see someone, like, it's common, you make a snap judgment in your head, right?
Sure.
That story always comes back to me, like, that's the big bugger.
Right. Okay. Anybody else? Okay.
I was going to say that, like, if someone maybe, like, is dirty, or not dressed as nicely as we think they're dressed, like, maybe in the assembly, if somebody comes in and it's not what we think proper standards, we might treat them like, you know, we might make a little judgment to assumptions that they don't care. Well, they could just not afford that, or maybe they don't have the things to, you know, look as, you know, clean.
Look as nice. Yeah. I also thought about, from the standpoint of somebody coming into services, what if somebody, because we have that happen a lot where people just come in. What if people come in and they're dressed in little bitty skirt up to here because that's acceptable in our society, and, you know, and so maybe it's not dirty. Maybe it's just extremely immodest. And how do we treat that person? Do we see the benefits in, you know, I think of the parable of the sower, sowing the seed, and wherever it falls, you know, it's up to them and their heart to accept or not to accept, but it's not up to us to judge that heart. But we need to try to sow the seed wherever we can.
It goes back to what Mark was preaching this last weekend about love. They don't know that, you know, people who maybe do not know the truth.
Right.
And do you love them enough to, you know, take the time or to have the compassion? The understanding to do that. Going back to what was mentioned before about someone in the assembly, when we lived in New Jersey, there were a lot of have-nots in our congregation, and they wore the very best they had to services, but it was coveralls for one man. And, you know, we had a couple of visitors one time from a large congregation in another city to come in, and this man was doing the Lord's Supper, doing a beautiful talk, wonderful prayer, and they actually had the nerve to say something out the back door, you know, to some of us, you know. And so people do make assumptions that someone is doing wonderful, you know, worship. Because of their dress, you know, just not that. But, you know, this man wore the best, it was clean, he was the best, that's all he had because of his job.
Right. I also thought about who we're willing to help financially. You know, there are, it's really easy to look amongst ourselves and our brethren and maybe you know a little bit more about their situation than other people do. And to judge them based off of, oh, they got themselves into this mess. Look, here we go again. You know, instead of having the attitude of not being naive, okay, and still the idea of, you know, if you're not going to work, you don't eat. And I understand all of that. But having that little bit of grace that, you know, we still need to help them. and being careful with that line, but still not automatically assuming and going to that line.
You don't have to give them money. You have to give them food.
Right. There are other things that you can do. That's right. That's right.
Melissa?
Yes, ma'am.
About making assumptions toward the poor. A lot of times people make assumptions toward those who are better off.
That's true, too.
And it can almost be worse because who do they think they are? Do they always get their way because they've got money? And it may be in a spiritual matter that one person, the person that maybe in discipline or something, you know those rich folks up there, they always get us poor folks, they don't get us one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Are they saying, I can't go to their house. I can't have them in my house. I don't have good enough stuff. And then the person, yeah, they have nice things, but they may not have always had nice things, and even if they have, even if they came from them, that doesn't mean they're not godly, they're not loving, they're not giving. And so the assumptions and the snobbery goes both ways.
That's right, it sure does. Okay, so can you think of a situation in the New Testament where brethren were reprimanded for the appearance of a man causing favoritism?
Well, so I don't remember if it was a wedding or an assembly, but where the man was dressed and they had put him in the front, and then the other man was put him in the back.
Okay, so that's James 2.
James 2.
Yeah, we're in James 2. Christina, since you brought it up, you want to read 1 through 9 for me?
Okay. My brethren, do not hold your faith in our glorious mercies with an attitude of personal favoritism. For from the man comes into your assembly with a gold ring and dressed in fine clothes, and there also comes a poor man in dirty clothes. And you pay special attention to the one who is wearing the fine clothes, and say, you sit here in a good place. And you say to the poor man, you stand over there, or sit down by my footstool. Have you not made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil motives? Listen, my beloved brethren, did not God choose the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he promised to those who love him? But you have dishonored the poor man. Is it not the rich who oppress you and push you to drive you into court? Do they not blaspheme the very name by which you have been called? But after you are fulfilling the rule of law according to Scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you are doing well. And if you show partiality towards the same sin and are convicted by the law of truth.
Okay, so what law from our reading does this attitude break? Like what sin does it cause?
Love your neighbor as yourself.
Love your neighbor as yourself. We have that. It's the second greatest commandment. And by making assumptions based on their appearance, we transgress this law.
And it doesn't just have to be appearance. You know, you're talking about favoritism and everything. It could be the color of the skin. It could be the nationality. It could be, you know, the wrong side of the track, so to speak. You know,
sure.
That kind of thing. You know, in relation to two apostles are involved here. In 11 through 14, Paul reprimands Peter for being with the Jews and not associating with the Gentiles. And
right.
He's the one who went to Cornelius and taught them the truth.
Right.
But so, you know, it was showing partiality for fear of being not like about the Jews that were standing there. You know,
right.
Barnabas, you know, the encourager. And he's drawn away by this partial thing, you know. And so they withdrew themselves from the Gentiles. And Paul gets on to him.
Yes, he does. Okay, any other comments on this before we move on to the next example?
I just added John 7:24, do not judge according to appearance, but judge righteous judgment.
Yes.
And so that sometimes we see somebody and we make assumptions before we ever even know their name.
That's right.
And that's very dangerous.
Yes, it is.
You know, Doeg did the same thing, and it cost the whole city of Nob priesthood to be killed. And he talked about David to Saul. He saw something, and because of his prejudice and because he wanted to be in good with Saul, he misrepresented what he saw. And so sometimes we can misrepresent what we see or hear without knowing the whole story.
Right. Okay, let's move on to 2 Samuel 10. Meemaw, can you read 1 through 7 for me, please?
Now it happened afterwards that the king of the Ammonites died, and Hinnom, his son, became king in his place. Then David said, I will show kindness to Hinnom, the son of Nahash, just as his father showed kindness to me. So David sent some of his servants to console him concerning his father. But when David's servants came to the land of the Ammonites, princes of the Ammonites said to Hinnom, their lord, do you think that David is honoring your father because he has sent counselors to you? Has David not sent his servants to you in order to search the city, to spy it out and overthrow it? So Hinnom took David's servants and shaved off half their beards and cut off their garments in the middle as far as their hips and sent them away. When they told it to David, he sent to meet them, for the men were greatly humiliated. And the king said, stay at Jericho until your beards grow and then return. And when the sons of Ammon saw that they had become odious to David, the sons of Ammon sent and hired the Arameans of Bethrehob and the Arameans of Jobah, 20,000 foot soldiers, and the king of Malka with 1,000 men, and the men of Tob with 12,000 men. And David heard of it, he sent Joab and all the army of Ammon.
Okay, so what assumption is made by Hinnom? Right, that he's going to come spy out the land, right? And he assumes that David has evil intentions, even though obviously that if he had taken a moment to look at the facts, if you look back in verse 2, David said, I will show kindness to Hinnom, the son of Nahash, just as his father showed kindness to me. So Nahash had shown kindness to David, and so he was just trying to be kind back to his family and his son who had taken over. So had he taken a second to consider what actually happened in the facts, he probably would have come up with a different conclusion. Instead, what does he do?
He listened to his friends.
He listened to his friends. How often does that get us into trouble?
That seems to be where his trouble started.
Right.
They planted the seed of doubt.
Right. And sometimes, probably not in this case, but in some occasions, which we'll see in Job, sometimes it's good people with good intentions. And probably not in this case. But he ends up listening to them. Okay. So, I asked you to define slander. What did you come up with?
False and defamating, false statement about a person.
Okay.
Evil, malicious talk intended to damage or destroy another person, condemned in the Ten Commandments, calling you shall not bear false witness.
Okay. So the utterance, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. I went and looked at the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia.
Okay.
And it really gives a true picture of what this person does. They slink about as a tell-bearer to create scandal against another.
Mm.
And maliciously, you know.
Right.
They're on track to do harm.
Right. So in this case, because he listens to the princess, what was the result of Hinnom's assumptions? What happens to him?
War.
War breaks out. Do they win?
No.
And then at the end, who was left? What happened to them? They became slaves, didn't they? Look at 12:26-31. the last verse, verse 31. He brought out the people who were in it and set them under saws, sharp iron instruments, iron axes, and made them pass through the brickland. So question for you. When I was reading this, I took this to mean that he made them slaves. He made them do these things for him. But I could also see how it could have been that he used those instruments to kill all of them. I just thought about that right now. Because when I read through it the first time, that's not how I read it. I read it as he made them use those instruments to become, it like became slaves to them. Joanne?
I read it the same way that you did.
Okay.
Because a brick was like a furnace to make brick, like dry.
To make bricks. Yeah, that.
And I guess in my mind, if he was going to kill them, it would have set fire. Or, you know, it wasn't used. Because it said that, that's why I saw it.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
One of the last sentences in that verse said he did that to all the cities of the Ammonites.
Uh huh.
So it wasn't just this one little group of people.
Right.
He
yes, ma'am.
To the whole country.
Right. He did. Going back to yes, ma'am.
First Chronicles chapter 3, verse 3. I'm not sure if this is the same time that it's talking about. He brought out his people who were in it and cut them with saws and sharp instruments and with axes, and thus David did to all the cities of the sons of Ammon.
Okay.
And David and all the people returned to Jerusalem. So that sounds like
that he killed them all. Okay. Give me that verse again, Nemo.
1 Chronicles 20, verse 3.
So I was wrong. He killed all of them. Either way, they went to war. And so if you go back to 2 Samuel 10, the my version says, you know, talking about the repercussions, what Hanan did affect the way David reacted to him? What was the wording used in verse 4? Oh, no, sorry, not verse 4. Hold on. Verse 6. Thank you. Verse 6.
Repulsive to David.
What else? Who has a different version?
Odious.
Says they stink.
Yeah. So it says it was the ESV says a stench. They were as a stench to David. Okay. And then we know what happens. They go to war and eventually they were all killed. Okay. And all because Hanan listened to the wrong people and acted very foolishly based on slander, not based on any factual evidence whatsoever. Yes, ma'am?
I was just going to say, going back to the friend thing, I feel like one of the best advice I heard about this was sometimes, like, it can be something that happened to you with this specific person, but, like, you go and tell this person, and they could be really good friends, but because you went and told something that happened personally that maybe passed them, now you see them in a different light, and now you treat them differently because another person had issues with them that they've already worked out.
Yeah.
So then, like, then you judge somebody just because one of your friends, you know, had a bad experience with them, and then, you know, and then you judge their heart because of that.
Sure. Okay, so a couple of lessons that can be gained. Be careful who you go to for advice, first of all, okay? Yes, ma'am.
This reminds me of Rehoboam, how he took the wrong advice from his friends rather than be wiser, and then lost the name of his whole nation.
Okay, very good. Okay, so back to this. Be careful who you go to for advice. Okay, so make sure that it's somebody who's going to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. which, you know, depending on your personality, sometimes we seek out those people, but sometimes we seek out the people who are going to sit down in the ashes with us and, you know, make you feel better about how you're feeling about somebody else instead of telling what you need to hear. And that's not going to help you grow. It's not going to help you come to good conclusions. It's not going to help anything. So when you're seeking advice, seek from those people who are going to tell you out of love what you need to hear. Let's look at Proverbs 12. Tammy, would you mind reading 5 through 7, please?
The thoughts of the righteous are just, but the counsels of the wicked are deceitful. The words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright will deliver them. The wicked are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous will stand.
And this is exactly what happened. He listened to the wrong people, and his entire nation was annihilated. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Sure.
Two things that helps me when I'm thinking about others. God's going to treat me the way I treat them. I better be very careful because he's also going to judge me the way I judge him. And so that's real scary to me. Because it's real easy for us to get mad at somebody and get down on somebody and make nothing good about them. But we better be very careful because we don't want God to treat us the same way.
Right.
Those are the two things that...
Keep you in line. I don't understand.
I'm not saying all too perfect there. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying
nobody
that.
Does.
It gets your attention.
Right. So then on the flip side of that coin, if you're the person giving the advice, remember there's always two sides to every story. So when you're listening to one side of it, remember that you're not getting the full story. You're not getting the other person's side. Remember that even the same story told the same way has two perspectives. And so there may be misunderstanding in there. There may be all different things. But just remember, just be careful with judging the story from one side. Okay, any more thoughts on this example before we move to the last one? Okay. I'm sorry. One more point. What does God have to say about assuming the worst of people?
In Deuteronomy 19:16-21, it's the penalty in the Old Testament for giving the false witness. So in Deuteronomy 19:16-21, it says, 3 times a year. 19:16. If a malicious witness rises up against a man to accuse him of wrongdoing, then both the men who have the dispute shall stand before the Lord, before the priests and the judges who will be in office in those days, and the judges shall investigate thoroughly. And if the witness is a false witness, and he has accused his brother falsely, then you shall do to him just as he had intended to do to his brother. Thus you shall purge the evil from among you. That's how bad God hated false witnessing. It cost them their lives if they were found to be guilty. And of course, the same thing as Pat mentioned, you know, in the New Testament, is the same for righteous judgment and things like that.
Right. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 13. It's talking about the love. And when you get down to verse 7, it says, bears all things, believes all things. What does believes all things mean? We believe the best in others. Right? So if we love our neighbor as ourselves, part of that is assuming the best about people, not assuming that they mean evil, not assuming that they're out to get you, but that they have good motives and and starting with that. Looking at it from a practical standpoint, what if somebody comes to talk to you about a spiritual matter in your life? How should we react?
Consider him our friend and listen.
Okay.
Don't get angry at them.
Don't get angry at them. Okay. Let's assume the best. Assume they have good intentions and that they're coming to you. But they were very blunt and they were straightforward and they lacked tact.
Impatient. Try to communicate.
Does that change
their motives?
Their motive. Thank you. It's the difference between your method versus your motive, right? So the method may need some work, but that doesn't mean that the motives were wrong. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I think if someone's coming to you to talk to you about a spiritual matter, then you obviously know them well, and like you know you have a relationship with them on some sort of level that you know them. You know they just might be a blunt person.
Sure.
Some people are. That's just how they are. If they're coming to you with that, then you know them at some point to know enough, like. Well, you know, they're not the most tactful, and they're
like, you know that that's their personality to begin with.
Yeah. It's more about listening to actually what they're saying and not active listening, not, well, what am I going to say to this? Because when you're thinking, how am I going to respond to this instead of, okay, you know what, yeah, you were blunt, you hurt me. Because the truth hurts sometimes. We don't want to hear our faults. We don't want to hear where we're falling short.
Right.
And it's like, okay, that hurts. But instead of a split response coming back where you can lash out and say things that you shouldn't and you necessarily don't need, be like, okay, I'm going to go.
Let me self-reflect and see.
Have a conversation about it.
Right. And let's see if this is merited. Sometimes it's not going to be. You know, sometimes people make mistakes in their judgments against us. And sometimes, you have to do some self-reflection and say, is this real? Is this something, or is this a pride issue on their part? Or, you know, and make some decisions based off of that. Yes, ma'am.
I was going to say, I think a huge part of this, and like the next thing that says believes all things and then hopes all things, I think like giving the benefit of the doubt to people. Like
right.
Giving them the benefit that you're saying this out of love, you're saying this to help me, or maybe like if it's something else and we get offended at something, okay, maybe they were having a rough day. Maybe, you know, they're struggling with something. Like always giving them an extra, you know, little bit of grace.
Right. Right. And they just may be inexperienced at it. I don't like confrontation very much, and so I tend to shy away from that. But it's a command that we have. If you know your brother is in sin, to go to them. It's the greatest act of love. And so don't automatically assume that their motives aren't pure. Okay. So
prejudice can get in the way of right thinking on both people. You know, the person who's coming to tell this other person what they're doing wrong could have prejudice, or the person who's being talked to about maybe a sin in their life or something that, you know, out of concern, and you're talking to them about it, they could have prejudice. You know, with some thought against this other person and everything. And so both of them have closed minds, and the heart shows there. You
sure.
know, both hearts may be even wrong in a situation, because sometimes people just want to jump on one little thing you've done, and then they're off and running with it.
Right.
And so, you know, we sometimes judge harshly and keep a different standard for those people than what we do for ourselves.
Sure.
And so, you know, Paul was called a pest stirring up the Nazarenes.
Right.
He's a ringleader of the Nazarenes, you know, because they had an issue against him, you know. And then when he was trying to tell them, you know, they threw him in jail and beat him and carried on. So, you know, prejudice can really be
a lot. Okay. I only have 5 minutes, so I'm going to have to do this next one really quick. All right, so this one is the most frustrating to me because it is in between friends, people that you should be the closest with. So I'll do a real quick summary job. God is talking to the devil. Devil says, God says, "Have you considered my servant Job?" And he says, "Well, of course he worships you. You've created this hedge around him. You've blessed him so richly. Of course he's going to serve you." And he says, "Okay, do what you want to him. Just don't touch Job." So he takes his children. He takes his servants. He takes his money. His, you know, all, you know, he leaves his wife, who tells him to curse God and die. And then, you know, he's still serving him. And then, you know, devil comes back to God, and God says, "Have you seen my servant Job?" Devil says, "You let me touch him. You let me touch him, and he'll curse you to your face." And so he says, "Okay, you just can't kill him." And so he's covered in boils from head to toe. He's in sackcloth and ashes. He's got scraping himself with pottery because he's so miserable. And then his three friends come to see him. So they start off so good. So in Job 2, 11 through 13. "Now when Job's three friends heard of all of his adversity, they came to him to sympathize and to comfort him." Verse 12, "When they lifted up their eyes at a distance and they did not recognize him, they raised their voices and wept. And each one tore his robe and threw dust over their heads toward the sky. They sat down on the ground with him for 7 days and nights with no one speaking a word to him, for they saw that his pain was very great." 7 days is a long time to sit with somebody and just sit. I mean, and to mourn with them. And I mean, so I feel like they started off really good. And so chapter 3, Job talks about his lament, and then his friends start talking. And so for the sake of time, I don't have time to read everything that they said, but we'll look at just, let's do Job 11. So verse 13, "If you would direct your heart right," 14, if "iniquity is in your hand, put it far away." 15, "Then indeed you lift up your face without moral defect." You know, so he goes through and he's, you know, if you've done this, if you've done this, if you've done this, you need to repent. And, you know, Job keeps telling them over and over again, you know, I haven't done anything. I haven't done anything, God, you know. And so, well, I guess I kind of answered this. What assumption was made by Job's three friends?
"You must have done something."
You must have done something pretty bad to be in the situation that you're in. Okay? And how does Job react to the allegations made against him? Yeah, he can. Yeah, I haven't. So go to chapter 13, verse 4. "You sneer with lies." Verse 5. "Oh, that you would be completely silent and that it would become your wisdom." Verse 7. "You will speak what is unjust for," excuse me, "will you speak what is unjust for God and speak what is deceitful for him?" Verse 10, "He will surely reprove you if you secretly show partiality." Okay, and then how does God react to the three friends' assumptions?
He's angry.
It says that his anger burned against them, right? That is not a situation that I want to find myself in. But he still gives them a way out. So what does he tell them to do?
Go to Job and take heifers and stuff that just for him to sacrifice for you and to pray for you.
Yeah, to have Job pray for them, which is an interesting concept. Have Job pray for them. So was this just an Old Testament assumption that you must have done something wrong or you wouldn't be in the situation that you're in?
No.
No.
I had a friend years ago. She had a baby with a birth defect in his heart this morning. One of the nurses that just made a comment to her, you must have really been wicked to have your back to your plan.
Oh, that's horrible.
Oh, no, it's alive and well.
Yes, it is.
Melissa?
Yes, ma'am.
Before you go to any further, Joe, from the beginning of all this, believed the same thing his friends did.
Yes.
Until he knew in chapter 9, after Eliphaz, and after Gilgad's statement in all of it, he talks about God will not reject a man in integrity in verse chapter 8, there at the end, and then chapter 9, verse 1, then Joe answered. And truth, I know this is so, because he believed that too, but how can a man be right with God? He said he knows he's not done the things you're accusing him of.
Right.
So this was even Job's concept before he was faced with the fact that he had not done all these horrible things they were accusing him of.
Right. I don't really have time to go there. So John 9, you know, the apostles asked Jesus, you know, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born this way? So it was something that was, that even the apostles didn't understand in the New Testament. One of the things I want to take away from this is these were his friends, and they should have known Job's character. How was Job described in chapter 1? Remember? Look at verse 8. Blameless and an upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil, for there is no one like him on the earth. So if there's no one like him on the earth, you would think that Job's friends would know the kind of man that Job was and his character, and base their judgments of Job on the merits of his character, and not just assume that he's done something horribly, terribly wrong for this to come, for this to have happened. Yes, ma'am.
And at first, I remember, you're looking at the speck in someone's eye when you have a log in your own eye.
Okay, yes, ma'am. Okay, so, and even to the point, talking about his character, even to the point in verse 5, it talks about him having these burnt offerings that he made for his children. It says, perhaps my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus Job did continuously. So he was always offering sacrifices for his children just on the off chance that they may have done something wrong. And so, so based on what they knew of Job and knew of his character, that shouldn't have been the assumption that they came to. All right, so really quick, let's wrap this up. How can we guard our heart against making these assumptions? What are some things we can do?
Check the facts before coming to your judgment.
Yes, very good.
Pray about it.
Yes, that was two of mine. Yes, ma'am.
In 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 11 says, for what man knoweth the things of a man, save the spirit of man which is in him? Even so, the things of God knoweth no man but the Spirit of God. We cannot know the motives of a person. So that's what helps me when somebody starts talking that. I think, do you know the motives, or are you assuming the motives?
Right.
So you have to distinguish between the two, and you can't know their motives unless they tell you.
Right. That's true.
You know, I put down check our own motives.
So, yes, very good.
We have motives sometimes too.
Yes, we do. So I wrote down pray. For me, at least looking back in my life, that has been such an underused blessing. When things happen and things get hard, or you're trying to make good decisions, when I'm studying to teach a ladies' Bible class, pray. Pray about everything, because the one person who can help you, a lot of times we don't tap into that help because we don't pray like we should, or at least I don't. And then talking about examining what you think you know against a person's character. Take their character into consideration. It may be a complete misunderstanding. That happens a lot, at least in my case. It seems that a lot of times when you get right down to it, it was just a simple misunderstanding between you and the other person. And if it's necessary, go talk to them about it. Sometimes that is necessary. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's a you thing, and you just kind of have to get over stuff. And like Christina said, always give people the benefit of the doubt. Always give them the benefit of the doubt. We are all trying to make it to heaven. So let's help each other. Okay, yes, ma'am.
And if it is an assumption, then you have to go to that person or to say, always do it with gentleness. Like, there's no need to be upset, to act unkind, gentle.
Yes.
But you know, sometimes after we've done all the right things with the right motives, their fruits will show that they have no intention of changing or, you know, becoming better, even though they know what the Word of God says because you've talked to them about it. So, you know, sometimes you have to make a correct judgment, righteous judgment, based on the fruits of their actions in the heart.
Okay.